presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I am going to do something pretty dangerous off the top of the show. I'm going to speculate. Now, for the most part, I kind of speculate for a living, but I'm going to speculate even more so than usual here for just a couple of minutes. I'm going to allow you to decide for yourself if this speculation is accurate. In fact, I'm even going to invite my team here together, Michael Carvel and Connor Riley, to join me in this speculation for just a moment. Let me start it this way. I make no apologies for the fact that I love lists. You know, I do a college football show every single year, every single day of the year. The offseason, in a lot of ways, is about lists. It's about, hey, top 10 this and top 25 that, and some cases top 100. Apparently, that's what Sports Illustrated is going through right now. They are ranking their top 100 players in college football. They've started at number 100. They've worked their way to 51. They've even started giving out some of the snubs. I thought Connor Riley had a good piece on this yesterday at DogNation.com. I hope that you will check that out. By the time you hear this, they may have already dropped the top 50 on all of this. And I like it. I like the debate. I like saying this guy's rated too high, this guy's rated too low. I just like all of that. And yet, in seeing what I saw from Sports Illustrated yesterday in its top, in its sort of first half of its top 100, I'm led to believe that there may be a few Georgia players who are underrated. Now, I'm not saying that it's an absolute crime against humanity that they may not be included in Sports Illustrated's top 100, but this may be one of those things where Georgia has a few players who are maybe better than their current level of fame would indicate. Now, in the top sort of back half of the top 100 that was released yesterday, 51 through 100, there were two Georgia players on the list. There was J.R. Reed on the list, the Georgia safety. That's kind of a cool thing to see. Not a huge surprise. J.R.'s gotten some attention the last couple of years. And Monty Rice was on this list as well. Now, I thought it was kind of cool to see Monty on the list because that's one of those guys that I thought a national publication like Sports Illustrated might overlook. But they didn't. They gave him the attention, and it just goes to remind you of just how crucial it would have been for Georgia had it had Rice playing healthy at the end of the year. That might have been a really good thing, but that's water under the bridge now. Here's the part where I'm going to speculate, though. If in the second half of Sports Illustrated's top 100, the names mentioned there are J.R. Reed and Monty Rice, then I think you can start to maybe make some educated guesses about who might not make the top 100 Sports Illustrated list. There are a few guys who obviously will. Jake Fromm's obviously going to be on there. Andrew Thomas is obviously going to be on there. DeAndre Swift's obviously going to be on there. Those are guys that you know are going to be there. But based on the fact that we've already seen 100 through 51, there are a few guys who I think might not make the list that I think are probably better than their current level of national attention would indicate. Does this make sense so far? Let me show you, if you're watching on screen, my list of underrated Georgia players. I've got safety Richard LeCount. I've got cornerback Eric Stokes. I've got two defensive linemen, Tyler Clark and Jordan Davis. I've got Solomon Kinley, Ben Cleveland, and Isaiah Wilson, the three offensive linemen. My assumption is that when the full list of Sports Illustrated names comes out, these guys will not make the top 100. Connor and Michael, do you agree with me these guys probably won't make the top 100? I'm seeing yes as I'm seeing heads being shaken. And I'm obviously not going to tell you that Georgia should have 15 guys in the top 100. That's not my point here. I'm not trying to say that. But I think that all of these guys, to a certain extent, have a case to be made for being better than their level of national attention might indicate. And in some cases, the guys on this list that I'm sharing with you right now might even be better than even some Georgia fans might think. Let me start with the first name on my list. That's safety Richard LeCount. I know that there's a lot of excitement and attention from Georgia fans about what some of the newer safeties might be able to do at Georgia, whether it's a guy like Otis Reese from the class of 2018 or a guy like Lewis Seen, an incoming freshman from the class of 2019. There is a lot of anticipation for what Reese might be able to do in an expanded role and what Seen's going to be able to do when he's on the field for the very first time this year. And I get all of that, and I, to a certain extent, kind of join you in that level of excitement as well. However, if you're asking me to kind of cast my lot with a safety who's going to break out in a bigger way for Georgia this season, J.R. Reed, to a certain extent, is kind of a known commodity. Who's the breakout guy going to be? I'm still casting my lot with LeCount more so than any of the younger players for right now. He's still kind of my guy there. And I saw what you all saw a year ago. Richard LeCount saw this. The missed tackles and the moments in which he could have and probably should have been better than he was. But here's the good news. of all the people talking about what LeCount maybe didn't do last year, what he needs to be better at in 2019 on the field, there is no one talking more about that than LeCount himself. Go back to this past spring. Mike Griffith, you know, looks him right in the eye and says, hey, you know, what are you doing to kind of make sure that you are a better tackler this year than you were a year ago? And LeCount took the answer head on. Here's one of the reasons why I think LeCount's overall game may be a little bit bigger than his national fame, because it seems like LeCount's pretty focused on making his junior season an impact one for the Dogs. Here is LeCount in his own words.
How much have you put on in the offseason? It looks like you've been more physical since the Sugar Bowl, maybe the effort to beef up the tackling or strength. What have you done in that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That was a point of emphasis during offseason training. I try to put on at least 15 pounds. So since January, I have put on, like, you know, 12 to 15, just keeping on bulk, being able to be more physical at the point of attack and tackling, going back to my fundamentals, basically tackling, you know, being able to help the team, because that's, you know, that's the main reason why.
Can you tell the difference when you bring it now?
Oh, yeah, I definitely feel better. I feel more confident in my strength and things like that, because I feel, you know, that I put in a lot of work to be able to, you know, change this, that problem that I had last year.
So in a former five-star recruit, is now more focused than ever, stronger, bigger than ever. I'm sorry, there aren't 100 players in the country I'm taking over Richard LeCount. And I do realize what Georgia also has at safety, and I'm, I guess, excited about those guys too. But if we're drafting a Sandlot team to go out and play against each other, I'm not letting 100 picks go by before I draft Richard LeCount. I am just not. I think he's one of the top 100 players in the country. I could say the same thing for Eric Stokes as well. It's not a surprise to me that Stokes is not on this list. He didn't, you know, wasn't a full-time starter a year ago. I truly think that he's one of those guys the media will find out about over the course of the year, and that's to be expected. There are always guys who are better than their fame would indicate. I think Stokes is kind of definitely one of those guys. I think the same thing is probably true about the defensive lineman as well. Now, I know the defensive line overall has been a little bit of an issue for Georgia. I do get that. But let's go back to last spring. Why do I think that Tyler Clark and Jordan Davis are worthy of maybe being on the list of underrated players, the kind of guys that don't get top 100 attention that maybe should? Because Kirby Smart, in his own words, has kind of described these guys as potentially difference-making defensive linemen. That's something that he's talked about himself. And if you are a difference-making defensive lineman on a team that could compete for a national championship, that would put you in the group of maybe top players in the country. Here's what Smart has said in the past about both Davis and Clark.
Difference makers. I think Tyler Clark's a difference maker when he wants to be, when he's playing really hard and playing quick. In a very unique way, Jordan Davis is a difference maker. I mean, he's not explosive and quick, but he's a mountain of a man, and he's hard to move. And in the SEC, you need a guy like that.
Yeah, so listen, I mean, if Kirby Smart's saying our difference-making defensive linemen are guys like Clark and Davis, then they're going to be on an underrated list for me when they don't get top 100 attention. I'm not necessarily surprised they don't get that look there, but I do think they are probably better and maybe more important to Georgia's championship fortunes than most of the national media probably indicates. However, if you want to get to truly underrated, and maybe to the extent that there were true snubs for Georgia, or likely to be true snubs once the full list comes out, I do think it's on the offensive line where you've got the biggest and best overall case to make. Almost for sure, Andrew Thomas is going to rank very high in Sports Illustrated's top 50 when it comes out. But as I said before, guys like Solomon Kinley and Ben Cleveland, Isaiah Wilson, I don't necessarily expect to see on there. But you can't be among the best offensive lines in the country if you don't also have among the best offensive linemen. This is not just a situation where the sum total of all the parts adds together and equals something great. The individual parts themselves have to be pretty good, too. Obviously, Thomas makes everybody better, but Kinley's among the best guards in the country. I think Cleveland is even underrated in comparison to Georgia fans. Much like some Georgia fans are excited about what's behind Richard LeCount on the depth chart at safety, we hear some of the same kind of stuff about Cleveland over the offensive line, and yet, much the same way I'm kind of betting on the veteran on defense with LeCount, I'm going to bet on the veteran on the offensive line when it comes to Ben Cleveland as being one of Georgia's five best, which is to say nothing of the other tackle, Isaiah Wilson. I understand why Thomas gets the most attention in comparison to the two tackles. He played first, and he's played great, seemingly, in every game that he's played. But as Isaiah Wilson explained himself going back to the spring, just because Andrew Thomas got a head start doesn't mean they won't both finish in a pretty good place. Wilson's been very honest. The learning curve for him coming into college was steep. But he gained a lot of ground a year ago, and to the point this year, if you don't have him among the most important players for Georgia and among the top in college football, then I do think you've overlooked a pretty important component of that. Let me let you hear Isaiah Wilson in his own words.
I think my first year, like any high school senior going to an SEC program in college, you have to get over the little hump and adjust and reacclimate to the SEC. So my first year was a learning curve. Second year, they gave me an opportunity to go out there and play ball, and that's all I wanted to do.
So I like that from Isaiah Wilson. I really like his attitude, and I think that Isaiah Wilson is a really sharp-looking offensive tackle for Georgia this season opposite Andrew Thomas. So can I do this? Can I show my list one more time here? I'm not saying it's a crime against humanity that these players don't end up being top 100, but I do believe, compared to the national attention they're getting, they're probably better than many reporters realize. On defense, I'm going to give you Richard LeCount and Eric Stokes, the two defensive backs. I'm going to give you Tyler Clark and Jordan Davis along the defensive line. And three offensive linemen, Solomon Kinley, Ben Cleveland, Isaiah Wilson. These are not among the most famous players for Georgia, but they are truly among the most important. And if Georgia wins a national championship this season, these guys that I just mentioned will be a big reason why. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m. Dog Nation. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're also on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rep, and we are available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you with us. We got a really fun special guest coming up. These offensive linemen I just mentioned, we'll talk to him about those a lot. That's John Stinchcomb, the former great offensive lineman on our program today. Can't wait to do that with you. Before that, though, let me remind you about what's coming up on Thursday, August 1st. How about Dog Nation Days of Summer? And how about the big announcement we made yesterday that right now you can go to DogNation.com. It is live. You can get involved and get in on this at DogNation.com. The link to register for your chance to win a VIP stay giveaway courtesy of Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. You got to get in and do that. Your chance to win is going to be a lot of fun. And by the way, if you want to be a part of our VIP reception that night that starts at 5 p.m., if you kind of want to secure your spot as a VIP for Dog Nation Days of Summer, don't just wait for the giveaway to see if you won. I'm going to give you between now and Friday to get in, get your room booked, and be a part of that. We have already sold more VIP rooms than we had allotted. So as of Friday, my bosses are telling me there are no more. We can make no more room in the VIP situation. So please do that by this Friday for your chance at that. Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa is just a beautiful place. There's also like four golf slots left. You can go to dognationhelp@gmail.com if you want to find out kind of more about that. It's all going to be a ton of fun. I cannot wait for Dog Nation Days of Summer, Thursday, August 1st at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. All right, let me go around the doghouse here for a second. Brought to you today by my friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia. And I want to try to be fair and balanced about something if I possibly can be, because I do think it's important sometimes to try to, you know, look and say, like, what are you missing? Is there something that I'm personally missing here? Because I've told you all before, obviously I'm a Gator hater, and you know, I've got all kinds of Gator hater paraphernalia here on the desk every day when I do the show. And yet, even with that said, I do truly believe that Florida will be a preseason top 10 team that finishes the year unranked. It is fair to point out that not everybody feels that way. Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, writing about Dan Mullen this week, says that Mullen's got the roster to overcome Georgia and get the Gators back to the SEC championship game. And doing that in 2019 would likely carry far more long-term significance than Jim McElwain and his consecutive trips to Atlanta in 2015 and 2016. So here we got a guy at CBS. I actually know Chip Patterson a little bit. I think he's a pretty good guy. Here we got a guy from CBS who says, Dan Mullen's got the roster to get it done against Georgia here in 2019. Now, I am firmly of the belief that this is mostly wishful thinking. I am firmly of the belief this is mostly just the media, much like our buddy Pete Butak, who we've talked about before, who just kind of want the SEC East to not be boring, and Florida rising up would prevent that from happening. But is there a chance I'm wrong? I mean, is there a chance that Florida really is better than I think that they are? I mean, clearly they've got some talent on defense, right? I mean, they're bringing back a lot of their productivity a year ago. They're bringing back a total of, like, I think, eight starters, I think. Offensively, they got a crop of wide receivers. They're bringing back a decent number of their rushing yards from a year ago. They're bringing back their starting quarterback in Felipe Franks. It's really interesting to look at Franks in his first year working with Dan Mullen, compare him to Dak Prescott in his first year as the full-time starter at Mississippi State, and look how identical these numbers are. Is there a chance I'm overlooking some of this? I want to deal with this more later on in the show. Frankly, I think I'm probably right, but it's probably fair to at least sort of give a little credit to the argument others are making about Florida. So we'll kind of dive in that and do that a little bit later on. For now, though, let me remind you that Around the Doghouse is presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. You know, solution's an important word here, because when it comes to the crack foundation you may have in your house or, you know, something along those lines, what Engineered Solutions of Georgia wants for you is a simple solution to that problem. They're not going to look to just, you know, upcharge just because they think they can. They want to solve your problem. Now, if it is something significant, the good news about Engineered Solutions of Georgia is they have a full-time, actually two of them, two full-time engineers on staff to help get that done for you. So you want to give them a call today. Simply dial 678-ESOG-NOW, 678-ESOG-NOW. If you've got a crack foundation, a damp basement, wet spot in your crawl space, you know, anything like that, the company to call is Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Get in touch with ESOG by dialing 678-ESOG now. All right, good to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily. We'll do more on the Florida thing later on. For now, though, let's talk to our good buddy, John Stinchco. And boy, it's great to have him back here on Dog Nation Daily. Always a fun guy to chat with. John and I are actually going to be teaming up for a video series. I can't tell you too much about this yet. This is all very secret and hush-hush, but you're going to be looking for this coming up in the days ahead here at DogNation.com. I think you're going to really like that, and I can't wait to do this with John Stinchcomb. John, welcome back to the program. Really appreciate you being with us today, and I hope you're doing well.
I'm great, BA. Always a pleasure.
So let me start with this. I want to talk some offensive line in a moment for you with you, but let me kind of start on a subject I was just kind of on a moment ago. John, I make no bones about the fact that I'm a Gator hater. Obviously, I don't want Florida to do well, and yet, as objective as I can be, as fair in my analysis as I can be, I think that Florida's got some problems on the field this season that would lead them not to be as good as their preseason ranking is going to indicate. However, when you hear somebody, and I just read from a CBS writer a moment ago, saying, nah, this Florida roster, it may be good enough to take down Kirby Smart in Georgia. Let me ask you, to a certain extent, Florida is more experienced than Georgia, especially now that Georgia's lost its top receiver, returning receiver in J.J. Holloman. Does that experience that Florida has, does it give it a potential edge against Georgia when these two teams tangle later on in the season?
I wouldn't describe it as an edge. I think it plays in your favor if you've got some experience, but experience can only go far when you talk about talent. And I think if you look on paper, there's really not a whole lot of comparison that can be made for the amount of talent that Georgia will be fielding as compared to what Florida is going to put out there. And I think very highly, sadly, of Coach Mullen and his staff, their ability to coach the game of football. They can do it at a very high level and get the most out of their players. But they just don't have the chops that Georgia has and the amount of players and talent that Georgia will put on a field. So, yeah, I mean, historically, it's been a big rivalry, and I'm glad that the tables have turned because there's not the same equity in talent between the two teams.
Yeah, because, I mean, the one thing that even Florida fans would admit is, while they have some experience, a lot of position groups, the one place they don't have a lot of experience, the one place they will be breaking in some new starters is along the offensive line. And obviously, John, you as much as anybody know that the one area in which you don't want to have a lot of question marks going into a season is with your line of scrimmage on offense. That's the kind of thing that can potentially upend any team. And for Florida, I think there's a very good chance that's true. I would not want to be going into the wars of the SEC not too sure about my offensive line, but under a best-case scenario for Florida, that's going to be the case this year.
We've been there before as Georgia fans, where you've got that unknown and that question mark resides in that front five, and it's not a pretty pleasant place to be because, it takes a concerted, congealed effort to produce. And anytime as a quarterback, if you're always looking at where that next defensive lineman's coming to tap you, then you're not able to make the plays. And that's the beauty that a veteran group with talent can offer the quarterback and running backs that they protect. And Jake Fromm, I'm sure, is very appreciative of the five and that he's got in front of him. And as we well know, it's not just five guys. There's probably seven, eight, nine that are starter caliber that he's experienced being protected by. And that's a thing of beauty for that offense.
Well, speaking of offensive line, let me talk to you a little bit more about something I was discussing before you joined the show. We know that Andrew Thomas is going to get a lot of national attention, and he should. He's likely a first-round pick. He's, you know, a candidate for, you know, every major award you want to throw his way, and that's all well-deserved. And yet the point I was kind of making, John, before you joined us, is that among the other offensive linemen, you know, if Georgia's going to be an elite offensive line, that's not going to be true because of just one guy. That Solomon Kinley, I think, is a really good player. I think that's been proven, and, you know, some of the sites like Pro Football Focus have measured that out. I think that Ben Cleveland has, in his healthiest moments on the field, been a pivotal part of some really big wins for Georgia. I think that Isaiah Wilson was an incredibly solid right tackle a year ago, despite the fact that he doesn't get as much attention as Andrew Thomas gets. Would you mind for a second talking about those other guys? And I'm purposely not including Trey Hill in this, because I think that Hill's a good-looking center, but we've seen less of him than the other guys, so it's really these other three that I want to address with you. What have you seen from Kinley? What have you seen from Cleveland? What have you seen from Isaiah Wilson? Of the sort of returning starters for Georgia, they are less heralded than Thomas, but in their own ways, I think they've made names for themselves. What have you seen from these guys?
Well, it's a special group, and you know, one of the reasons why Andrew Thomas gets the attention is because his game projects to the NFL really well. He's good in the run game, but the way he moves in the pass game and really came in as a freshman last year, true freshman, and his balance, his control, his footwork was that of a veteran, you know, somebody who's been in the SEC 3 or 4 years, and his ability to take on some of the better pass rushers that this country sees in the college game almost effortlessly was very impressive. Then he makes the switch over to left tackle and did that pretty seamlessly. So there's a reason why he's heralded as a potential first-round pick, if not, you know, top 10 guy. And it's because of the way his game translates to the NFL. You look at the rest of the guys, Solomon Kinley, in my opinion, is one of the best true guards in the SEC. And he's not, you know, he fits the role of a guard and does it exceptionally well. For Ben Cleveland, I tip the hat to Coach Pittman in seeing what he had in Ben Cleveland, because he was a highly recruited tackle coming out of high school, yeah. And his transition to guard has been one that has had to be deemed a success and fits his game much better than, you know, you look at him, he's huge. He's a huge guy. He's like 6'7", one of the bigger offensive, taller offensive linemen on campus in Athens, but yet has been playing guard. You watch him play, he's able to bend. He's a flexible guy, so you know, that's your concern when you see a 6'7" player play inside, and he's been able to do it at a high level. And in my opinion, Isaiah Wilson, for what Georgia does and their desire to lean on folks and create space in the run game, it's a perfect fit for how Isaiah plays. I mean, he's a guy that if he gets a chance to maul someone and gore them into the ground, he's going to take it. And that's the kind of personality that Georgia has created over the past couple of years with their offensive front is we're going to pound on you, we're going to lean on you, and then take our shots. Now, Isaiah, you know, he's got all the talent in the world and will continue to develop, and probably why he's not mentioned yet in the same vein that Andrew is because of his pass protection. And it's something that a skill that you develop, and I've got no doubt that he's going to take another step forward in the pass game from where he was the previous year.
And just to follow up on that, I think what's really cool about that is, you know, Wilson and Cleveland in their own right were elite recruits, so seeing them play well, to a certain extent, not necessarily that big of a surprise. Kinley, on the other hand, though, was probably viewed as more of a project when he did sign with Georgia in the 2016 class. And, John, you know this. when people look to poke a hole in Kirby Smart's resume, one of the things they're going to try to do is say, well, we know he can recruit, but can he coach them up when they get on campus? But when you see a guy, you know, being tutored by Solomon Kinley, who really is playing better as a collegiate player than his high school profile would have almost, you know, predicted for him, that is an example of player development, is not? Now, you can say the same thing about defense as well, where three-star defensive backs like DeAndre Baker winning the Thorpe Award. But just to keep it to your position for a moment, when a guy like Kinley is a relative unknown, and now you just described him as one of the better guards in the SEC, doesn't that go straight to player development? And isn't that kind of a feather in the cap of Pittman, who's already got a great reputation, and Kirby Smart as a young coach who's able to say, yeah, not only do I recruit them, I develop them as well?
Oh, without a question. I think that's one of the best developments that the athletic program has done over there is, you know, for a number of years, we had some turnover. We've had good offensive line coaches come through. Stacy Searles is one of them, and there have been a few others. But when there's turnover, you don't create the same consistency. And in my opinion, I think Sam Pittman's arguably the best offensive line coach in college football. So Kinley is a prime example. And in my opinion, Ben Cleveland as well, a guy that Coach Pittman had a vision for and sees, I've got a space for him. You can say the same probably of Cade Mays, who was a highly touted tackle and gets some of his first starting opportunities at guard. And that's not an easy transition to make. You've got to learn the ins and outs and intricacies of a position change, going from space at tackle to grinding and the power game that comes from being an interior player. So player development is a huge, I think, advancement in Georgia football. You look in years past, they came in pretty talented and they left almost the same. And I don't want to speak specifically in a derogatory way about some previous coaches, position coaches, but you can't deny the fact that it's been a major upgrade for us to have Coach Pittman and his ability to take a player from where they're at and build on what their strengths are. You know, it's funny. Sorry, I know you get me on my soapbox, but
please.
With Solomon Kinley, he probably wasn't that, you know, baseball term, five-tool athlete that had all the pieces, but which would get you all the stars and everything else. But, I mean, he's a guard, and there's a spot for those guys. I mean, he may not be able to stretch out and play tackle and create length and take on some of the more athletic defenders, but in this system and for his shape and what he excels at, he's become one of the strong players, interior guys, for Georgia, and that's a testament to him for knowing his game and then coaches for recognizing the skills he has and put him in a position to succeed.
Yeah, I think that's really true, and I think that's very well said. Let me finish up with this. Next week is kind of one of those final corner polls we have to get around before the start of the upcoming season. It's SEC Media Days in Hoover, Alabama. I apologize for not remembering. John, did you represent Georgia at SEC Media Days at any point? I'm assuming 2002. You would have very likely been one of the speakers on Georgia's behalf. Did you go to Hoover in SEC Media Days back then?
I did. Yeah, that was the first time. I think it was Coach Rick, Boss Bailey, and myself. Maybe can't remember if Terrence Edwards was on that flight as well. But it was it's pretty nerve wracking as a young man, and you're on those tiny planes. You feel like you're flying sideways the first time. That's what I remember most. Holy cow!
I'm sure there's also probably a crazy collection of questions as well. It's probably wilder now than it was then. It was a pretty big deal even back then, though. I was going back during some of those years as well. But I'm sure, you know, that many microphones in your face, that many people asking you questions, it does take a little getting used to, I'm guessing, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Not to mention, you've got beat reporters from all the different schools constantly baiting you for that one-liner that you can they'll post on their bulletin boards when they get back home. So, yeah, there's plenty of landmines when you get there of guys trying to bait you and say some things that are inflammatory.
Well, John, listen, it's great stuff. You were obviously a great representative for Georgia. No better person to speak on behalf of the program then, and it's fun to talk to you about these things now. We got some fun stuff we're going to be doing together, and I can't wait to tell people more about that. But for now, I just wanted to say thanks for being with us here on Dog Nation Daily, and I'll look forward to speaking to you again very soon as well.
I look forward to more to come, VA. It's going to be fun.
Yes, it is. That's John Stinchcomb there, just a great, great friend of Dog Nation. And you'll talk about, listen, you know, I've made no apologies for being a fan of this program, and while I am not a UGA graduate, I do appreciate people who represent the university well. You know, I'm talking about beyond just, hey, that guy was a good football player and then won a Super Bowl. I'm talking about beyond that. You know, guys who are, you know, choosing to make Georgia their home and choosing to work to make the university community better. You know, John does those things, and I just think that's a cool thing to be a part of. And I love what he said about Solomon Kinley there at the end. And I think one of the untold stories, and Georgia's not the only program that does this well. There are a lot of programs that do this well. But one of the untold stories about college football is the way that these programs through science can change the bodies of the players who come in. You know, this time of year, you'll see these Instagram photos pop up, and you're like, wow, gosh, so-and-so has gotten so much stronger. And in some of the cases, some of these big guys like Solomon Kinley, over the course of their career, they slim down more. Georgia's not the only program who's good at that. I think it's probably fair to say that Georgia's better at that now than it used to be, though. That's probably true. But, you know, Kinley's one of those guys. And Kirby Smart, you can go back and listen to some of this stuff, especially before the 2018 spring practices, about how, you know, Kinley took it on his own to slim down his body and be serious about that. I'm guessing it's probably a little bit easier to take a big guy and slim him down than it is to take a small guy and beef him up. I'm guessing that's true. I might be wrong on that, but that's my assumption. It's still nonetheless cool to see how good Georgia has been at transforming these bodies, taking what the guys bring with them from high school and then turning into something that can be effective at the college level. That's one of the real stories for why Georgia has put itself in the position where it's at, and it's a nice thing to see.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, really fun stuff there. Always love when John Stinch comes here on Dog Nation Daily. I got some stuff of the SEC Through I think you're going to like there as well. Before we get to that, let me remind you about my friends at Kroger. You know, they've got you covered right now for upcoming summer road trips. You can save on everything you need to keep the kids happy. Let me tell you something. I was just on a road trip to the beach and back, and keeping kids happy is a big part of the story. Well, how about this from Kroger to do that? How about 10 for $10 Swedish fish or Sour Patch, 2 for $3 Lifesaver gummies, or 2 for $7 Hershey miniatures? Just throw that. It's almost like you're you know, going to the zoo and you're kind of feeding an animal in the petting zoo. Just toss that candy back in the back seat every now and then and keep the kids quiet. It's probably kind of a nice way to roll down the road, a little savings on some candy at Kroger. And that's not a bad way to kind of keep the kids quiet and happy and get them watching their iPads or something on the way to a vacation. I actually love that. Really good job there from the friends at Kroger on all of that. All right, let me talk about a couple things here for a moment. Let me start where I left off, and then I'll pick up some of the rest of these SEC stories. So I was talking before about, you know, when you see the CBS writer Chip Patterson and others saying, hey, Florida's a threat to Georgia, Florida's a threat to Georgia. You just heard me talking to John Stinchcomb about that a little bit. I mean, I do think I have an obligation not to just come on here and be rah-rah and, you know, do the Eddie Gator hater stuff and just say it's all a bunch of bunk. I think it's fair to question that. And, you know, obviously, Florida's experience on defense probably matters. It's probably going to be a pretty good defense. This is a living, breathing defense. Maybe not as good as it was maybe in some of the Jim McElwain years, which is kind of a funny thing to say. But still, this is a competent defense, especially with the secondary. Florida seemingly always pretty good there. I actually like some of the wide receiver talent that Florida has. I think that's a fair thing to bring up. As I told you before, I was doing some research on this yesterday. It's amazing, statistically, side by side, how similar Felipe Franks' stats were a year ago to Dak Prescott at Mississippi State in his first full year starting for Dan Mullen, you know, back there in Starkville. And some Florida fans are going to tell you, and look at the jump that Prescott made in his next year. That's the same jump that that Felipe Franks is going to make this year, and it may happen. Here is the thing, though, that I think you got to question. This is where my skepticism in Florida really kind of comes in on all this. It is true that maybe Felipe Franks will grow in his next year working with Dan Mullen much the same way that Dak Prescott did. But the question that's fair to ask is, was Dak Prescott a special college quarterback, or was Dan Mullen a special college quarterback coach? Because a lot of Florida fans want to tell you, boy, Mullen's great when it comes to working with the quarterbacks. But the evidence you base that on is Tim Tebow, who is undoubtedly a special quarterback. Let's face it, Mullen didn't exactly prepare him very well for the NFL, but Tim Tebow is a special quarterback. You certainly admit that. Dak Prescott may have also been a special college quarterback. Whatever happened to Nick Fitzgerald? Whatever happened to him? He was a preseason All-SEC in 2017, and by the end of the year, essentially looked like a converted safety playing the position. Somehow that quarterback whisperer stuff that Dan Mullen did didn't seem to impact every quarterback that Dan Mullen's coached, which opens the door to some at least skepticism that Felipe Franks is going to have the big jump that he needs to be competitive in the SEC. Because Franks a year ago was no better than average. This is fewer than 50%, fewer than 60% completion percentage. Made some nice throws, made some terrible throws. He's essentially just the median SEC quarterback. About half the quarterbacks in the league last year were better than him, and he's probably better than about half of them as well. But if it's not a big jump from Felipe Franks, this is not a super dangerous offense. When you look at Mullen's past, this idea that every quarterback that he's touched has somehow blossomed and done great things, it just doesn't necessarily back all that up. And the fact that Florida does have kind of a suspect offensive line, I think that makes that even more questionable. All right, let me do a couple of other things here kind of fast. I thought there was I saw this at the Spun yesterday. So Tom Hicks, who at one point in time was the Rangers owner, is he still the owner of the Texas Rangers? I think maybe he is. Is he still the owner of the Rangers? I honestly don't know, but I think at one point in time he was. So he goes on like some random podcast, and they get into a discussion about Nick Saban and how apparently Saban in 2013, after the 2012 season, came very close to taking that Texas job. Apparently Mack Brown, according to the story that in the podcast that was written about at the Spun, according to Mack Brown, Brown did not sign off on this whatsoever. The money quote here was that Brown said he didn't want Saban coming to Texas and winning a national championship with his players, as if Mack Brown's roster at the end of his run there at Texas was some dazzling thing like that. So maybe I'll put a link to this. I thought that was kind of a juicy, rumory type story. The overall point here is, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it's worth remembering, that we look at the Nick Saban era at Alabama as if it's just been this perfect run of pristine football with every Alabama fan happy every step of the way and Saban happy with Alabama every step of the way. Honestly, it wasn't always the case. I mean, yes, 2012 Alabama had won the national championship, but Saban was feeling like Alabama fans apparently weren't all that appreciative. And remember, in 2013, this Alabama offense had a lot of questions. This was not a great Alabama team necessarily in 2013. They were kind of stuck in the same offensive rut that LSU was. It's really the transformation the program underwent when Lane Kiffin came in 2014 that really changes all of that. So it's important to remember that, this dynasty that everybody aspires to, Alabama, along the way, things haven't always been perfect there in Tuscaloosa at one point in time, maybe even. According to Tom Hicks, Saban was fairly strongly considering going somewhere else. All right, let me do a couple of other things here real quick. Our buddy Ben Wolk had this on Twitter yesterday. Malik Willis, the former Auburn quarterback who lost out in the quarterback competition to Joey Gatewood and Bo Nix. Those are the two remaining guys there at Auburn who eventually one of them will become the starting quarterback. Malik Willis has found his new home. He's going to go to Liberty, where you'll remember that Hugh Freeze is now the head coach. And I don't know if he's going to get immediate eligibility or not. I at this point in time, I don't even know what the rule is anymore. It seems like it's kind of been kind of weirdly adjudicated, but that's what Malik Willis is going to do. I would be curious to see what Hugh Freeze could do with an SEC level quarterback, even if it wasn't a starter level player. I'd be curious to see how quickly Hugh Freeze get that Flames offense running down up there in Lynchburg, Virginia. And I'd be kind of curious to see how good Malik Willis really is, because at one point in time, Auburn fans had a little bit of excitement about him. They obviously waned on that and kind of turned their attention to the other two guys. But listen, Malik Willis playing for Hugh Freeze at Liberty, that's not a bad show. I wouldn't mind seeing some more of that. I mentioned the Chip Patterson thing before, what he said at CBSSports.com about Dan Mullen and Florida. This comes in an article about other second-year coaches around the country and the expectations for them. Mullen was among his with the most to gain. There are a few SEC coaches he mentioned that have the most to lose. One of those is Jeremy Pruitt. And I understand where this is coming from. I don't think the ceiling for Tennessee is very high. I do think they could be better than some people think. Winning record this season, bowl eligible. I think that's a possibility for Tennessee. Some people don't even think that they could be able to do that. If it's not much better than that, though, if this is another year where they don't even qualify for a bowl, I think it is fair to say that Pruitt does have a lot to lose there, because below the surface, Tennessee's actually got a little bit of recruiting momentum. Look at a guy like Eric Gilbert as an example. Tennessee has an inroad with him. They've had other inroads with Elite Four and five-star type players. It becomes harder to sell that, though, to even guys like that if you don't have some success on the field. And for Tennessee, it's not going to be easy. They play, you know, a tough SEC schedule. Patterson also mentions Joe Moorhead. I think Mississippi State may be a disaster this year. I think the shine could come off Moorhead pretty quickly. He mentions Chad Morris there as well. I'm actually a little higher on Arkansas than some people might be. And then the other thing that Chip Patterson says at CBSSports.com is the pressure's kind of deferred on Jimbo Fisher, meaning that he doesn't face a lot of second-year expectations. For the most part, I think that's probably true. He is recruiting well enough now to keep Aggies fans happy, and I think even in a sort of a college football crazy spot like College Station, there's got to be a little bit of a sense of realism knowing that they've got Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia on the schedule. Now, I'm sure A&M fans think they're going to win all three of those games, but boy, that's a pretty talented roster that's playing an incredibly tough schedule. I think the real measuring stick for Jimbo Fisher probably comes more like year three and year four than what might happen here in year two, but we'll make that your SEC through at least for now. Let me do a couple more things though before we get ready to wrap up the program here today. I thought it was interesting that recently ESPN has updated its FPI projections for the upcoming season. This is kind of like you know, one of their mathematical formulas where they kind of tabulate all the efficiency stats and things like that, and they can use those to make some fairly accurate predictions about how things might play out for the various college football teams this year. Georgia's third in the FPI projections for ESPN this year, and Georgia has about I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's a 2.5% chance of going undefeated this upcoming season. Now, I've said before that I think that Georgia will have a 12-0 regular season, and despite the fact that there's only less than a 3% chance of that occurring, I still think that's not a crazy radical opinion to say that Georgia might do that this year. But it is worth pointing out that ESPN is not super high on Georgia running the table for all 12. How about Clemson, though? They have almost a 50% chance of going undefeated, a very similar statistical profile to Georgia. You think an easier schedule doesn't matter? The ESPN FPI data tells you everything you need to know about that. For our video audience, let me show you one more thing, too, before we get ready to go out the door here. You may have seen this new craze that's out there where guys and gals try to do the back kick type karate type thing, and they try to kick the top off the water bottle. One of the best ones I've seen came from Ryan Trouble Davis. Now, he's been kind of recovering from an injury situation. The fact that he's as good as he is doing this probably speaks pretty well of his return to health here, looking pretty good in that video. Pretty good video work as well. I don't know who shot this, but to get the slow motion spin of the bottle cap as Davis kicks that. Now, I realize if you're listening on the radio, the podcast, you can't see a lick of this, and I apologize. But pretty good job there by Ryan Trouble Davis kicking off the top on the energy drink bottle there. By the way, around here we are Gator haters. We make no apologies for that. 984 days. That's our Gator Hater Updater. Y'all have a good day. We shall see you tomorrow right here on Dog Nation Daily.